Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we are now holding in the Binding of Isaac as we've begun discussing. We've spent 2 weeks on this so far. What we've done in the first 2 weeks is simply go through the text. We went through from beginning to the end, I don't know, what is it, maybe 20, about 20 verses or so, and we raised a lot of questions, and we did not give a lot of answers. That is our goal in the first couple of weeks, just to be familiar with the story, which I hope now we are a lot more familiar with, and notice a lot more patterns, phrases, words that come up. And what we're going to do now is, as we've done in this class, we're going to go through Rashi, the Ramban, and then Rav Hirsch to sort of really flesh out the story as to the classic commentators. What we're going to do is we're going to do a little different than we normally do. Generally, we do Rashi first, and then we do the commentary of the Ramban and Nachmanides. As is often the case, and particularly here, Rashi is so rooted in the Medrash. He's not giving us a literal. He's not like, you have to go in order. So Ramban is much more text oriented, pshat, the simple meaning of the text and of the story. So we're going to start with the Ramban because the Ramban spends much more time on the simple meaning of the story. Then we'll build to Rashi, who brings in many more of the statements from the sages and from the Medrash. And then we'll go to Rav Hirsch, and then again, as I told you, I hope to do is we'll bring in Rabbi David Foreman, not in person, but his particular approach as well, which will really round out this really significant story in our nation's history. But let's start with the Ramban. The first page, I apologize, did not come out so clearly, but it will work. I gave it to you in blue, so that we'll have that, and you can hold on to that as we go along. Rashi will be in the regular white, and you'll be able to distinguish, since they otherwise look very similar. You'll know that the blue pages, that's the commentary of the Ramban. Okay, ready?
Ready.
Here we go. So the first verse, you know what? We should bring out the Chumash, because I realize that the way that I photocopied it, we don't have the English translation. You sort of do. You know, you could see if you want to make do, it's on the other page, it's on the back side. In other words, the commentary is on the back side, so you can either, you can do with it whichever way you prefer. I think it should be okay.
Yeah.
Now, either you could look in your Chumash, or you can look we're starting on page 496 and page 497. On the back side, you'll actually find the translation. Let's take a look again. Let's raise some of the questions that we had, and then see how the Ramban addresses it. Verse 1, Vayehi achar ha-divarim ha-eila. It was after these things that God tested Avraham, v'ho Elokim nisoes Avraham, v'yomer elav Avraham, v'yomer hineini. So we had raised on this first verse a couple of points. Number one, most significantly, which the Ramban is going to address, we have here a statement of introduction that God tested Avraham. We find very few times, a real small handful of instances in which the Torah explicitly says before an event, this is going to be a test. Whereas almost all of our lives can be defined as a test, every moment, every experience that we have, but rarely does the Torah actually state, this was a test. And here we certainly found that. That was left us with, what exactly is the test? What does God want from Avraham? And we have the calling out by name, Avraham, and Avraham responds, Hineni. Let's take a look at this first Ramban. The Ramban here, this is a very fundamental Ramban in all of Jewish thought. He discusses this concept in other places in his commentary. What is the concept of a test? Why does God test human beings? If God is all-knowing, then He should not need to test us. Because the reason why I would give a test as a teacher to my students is to make sure that they have the information. I want to know what it is that they got and what it is that they didn't get, so that if they got it well, I can reinforce their good behavior and their learning skills, and if they didn't get it, I can go back and fill in the points that they didn't get. If God is all-knowing, then there should not be a need for a test. He should teach, and then He'll know if I got it, if I didn't get it. Why are there tests? What is the purpose of a test from God? And the Ramban says, well, you have the completely wrong understanding of a test. It's not the teacher-student model at all. If it were to be a teacher-student model, the way that I presented it, then of course God would not need to test us, because He would already know what it is that we would score on the SAT. But instead, God has a different plan. Says the Ramban, Inyan ha-nisayon hu l'da'ati. The following is my opinion, says the Ramban, how we should understand the matter of God subjecting a person to a test. What is the entire concept? Now again, even though here The Ramban is stating this here because the Torah overtly states this was a test. So the Ramban says, let me explain what a test is. This idea that the Ramban is about to express is everything, though. What's that?
No, I just said free will.
Yes. So says the Ramban, Ba'avur hayos masa ha'adam rishus mukhletes biyadu. A person's actions are completely within his own control. He uses the language rishus mukhletes biyadu. Completely, entirely, nothing can force me to do anything. Even when we would say in halacha, which is the concept of I was forced into doing something, person holds a gun to your head, heaven forbid, and says, eat that cheeseburger or I'll kill you. So you eat the cheeseburger, and halacha recognizes, and they say, you were forced. But even that, I made a choice to live and eat, rather than, like, no one forced me to do it. The only time you can say someone literally held your hand or forced your mouth open, but outside of those, you know, maybe our actions are completely our choice to do, and certainly under anything less than a person holding a gun to our head, we make the decisions in our life as to how we want to live. Says the Ramban, if he wants to do a certain act, he will do it. If he does not want to do it, he will not. That is step one. We have the concept, as you mentioned, free will. Our behaviors are our choices, which is in itself, the Ramban is, that's really the springboard of his discussion, but that is the fundamental tenet of everything that Judaism believes, that God created man and gave man the ability to choose how he wants to live his life. Therefore, yikare nisayon, therefore there's a concept that is something, God's command to a particular person is called a test, mitzad ha-menuse, from the point of view of the tested party. Meaning, it's like when in my teacher model, I'm the tester. When I give the test, it's so that I should gain information. I need to know how my students are learning, how they are gaining and gathering information. So for me, I test them. It's in the end for their betterment so that I can help them. But the point of the test is for me to gather information. Says the Ramban, in God's world, the point of the test is not for the tester, but for the testee. Correct. But the tester, capital T, blessed be he, commands the tested party to perform a certain act in order to bring forth the matter of that person's righteousness from the potential to the actual, so that he should have the reward of having done a good deed, and not only the reward of having a good heart. Says the Ramban here, it's to bring out the potential of the individual. And so often in life, a person has a lot of potential, and God sees that within us. You can accomplish this, you can accomplish that. But it's only when we're put to the fire, when the circumstances call for it, that we actually bring that out. And we create in the world that which was always latent within us, but there just never were the circumstances which brought it out. Says Ramban, and when it was there, you had the reward of a good heart. A person can work on himself, that I'm the type of person that if I would be faced with the challenge of someone knocking at my door at 7 o'clock and I'm about to sit down for supper, I would still answer it. So there's a certain reward that I would get of having of the good heart to be able to do so. But if I don't actually do it, then the reward is only a matter of having a good heart, not of actually opening the door with a smile when I don't want to, of actually doing that. So what does God do to bring that out? So he sends me someone to knock on my door at 7 o'clock and I'm about to sit down for supper, so that I can bring into the world not only the good heart that I've been working on, but putting it into practice. A very simple example is an artist. Talking about animation, right? So a person can be an artist. I have the ability to draw or paint or create a sculpture, whatever it may be. And I know that I have it. So am I happy and satisfied to say, oh, I could do something like that. I go to a museum and I see beautiful artwork and I say, I can do that. And it's true, I can.
But you have to do it.
Oh, come on, it's great. But you know what? Like, do it. And until you bring it out into the world, so, okay, so you have all this potential inside. So in life is like that. You know, I'll tell you, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman wrote his book, Tales Out of Shul. So his son-in-law, and his grandson-in-law, Rabbi Ilan's son-in-law, Ari Shoshan, rabbi in Phoenix, I was talking to him years ago about it. So he told me, he said, you know, he was quoting his father, Rabbi Ilan, that people, other rabbis, said to him, you know, I read your father's book. Great book. I also have 100 stories. All the rabbis were talking to him. That I, you know, every rabbi could also write such a book. And Rav Alon said to him, yeah, but they didn't. Right? Yeah, I also had a story. I also had this experience and that experience. But the whole different world, all of us who've ever endeavored on such an experience know, taking the thought and putting it into the, totally different. So our lives are like that. The kindness, the goodness, what we're able to accomplish in the world. So we feel things are a test. And we say, I can't believe God is testing me. Why is he doing this? I'm suffering with this and with that. Says Rav, you don't understand. What you're going to create because of this, what's going to come out of this, the bringing out into the world of goodness is would have otherwise just been within your heart. And therefore, I know that it's there, but so you should receive the reward, not just of the good heart, but of the good deed. Therefore, we are actually tested. And we all can bring many, many, many examples from our own lives and from others where unfortunate tragedies that people suffer recreate the fabric of the world. People create organizations, they create societies, they create foundations. And it's because of a terrible tragedy. Now, I'm not playing God and saying that's why it happened. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, but we can see how through the difficulties, that which the potential that the person had to bring something out might have always been there, but it's only then through something like that, that actual good is brought into the world. And again, I'm not saying, I don't know, until a prophet were to tell me that, I'm not saying that. But the concept of when we are pushed against the wall, then we actually do things. Says the Ramban, so the purpose of the test is not for the tester, capital T, he knows, but it's for the tested, that as he says, to bring forth the matter of that person's righteousness from potential to the actual. That's the concept of the test, so that the reward given, the eternal reward, which is really why God put us into this world, is to perfect ourselves and then to reap the benefit of the eternal reward. So if the purpose of creating us was that we should succeed and get the reward, so we sometimes need to push us and prod us in order that we should bring out our full maximum potential of being able to do that. And then we have that reward of not just having done, not just having a good heart, but of having done the good deed. Says the Ramban, well, there's a major risk in this, in that we might fail. Once I get tested, once I'm put into that scenario, maybe I won't come through. A test is a difficult ordeal. We all know all of our experiences are not easy. So true, if I succeed, I'll bring out a part of me which might have otherwise remained latent within me, but maybe I won't make it. Maybe I'll fail, says the Ramban, and you should know. Bottom paragraph, that Hashem examines only the righteous man. When he knows about a righteous person that he will fulfill his will, and he wants to grant him merit, then he commands him to do some difficult act as a test. He does not, however, examine the wicked who would not listen to him. This is the idea which many of you, I'm sure, have heard, that God only gives us tests which we can handle. The purpose of a test, says the Ramban, is to bring out our potential. It's not to cause us to fail. And when he knows that the wicked will not listen to him, so he doesn't test somebody who's not going to go through with it, who's not going to come out, because what's the point? There is no point in a test that I can't handle. By definition, if you have the test, you can handle it, because that's the purpose of the test, is to bring out the potential. And the greater the test, the greater the level that God sees within us of potential to be brought out, of that which we can do, that which we create, that which we can withstand. It does not test the wicked, because there is no purpose. It's a fundamental tenet of that which we believe, that he knows, and he's there to do good for us, and to bring out that which we have within us, not to see us fail and suffer. And therefore the test, says the Ramban, as he concludes, thus, flipping to the top of the next page, all tests mentioned in the Torah are for the benefit of the tested party. So every time we find that the Torah will explicitly mention the concept that God is testing someone, it's for the benefit of the one receiving the test to be able to bring out the actualization of their potential into the world. Okay, now what the Ramban does not address, and what I'm going to say for Rashi, is the first phrase of this verse. And it was after these things. The Ramban, the Torah leaves open as if the Ramban seems to be okay with it on a level of just pshat, on the simple meaning of the story. Where is this story taking place? Following the birth of Isaac, then the kicking out of Yishmael and the expulsion. After these things, this event took place. The Ramban does not take the time to connect what is it about the previous stories that lead to our story of the binding. He totally ignores that and moves on. Rashi also has two midrashic approaches. And we will get to that, we'll save that for when we get there, but I'm noting now that that is that significant part of tying the whole story together that Ramban does not particularly tackle. Okay, verse 2. And he said, take now your son, your only one, whom you love, Yitzchak, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as an offering upon one of the mountains which I shall tell you. So as we mentioned, this in this one verse, verse 2, is the entire commandment. It's not a long conversation, it's not several verses long. This is it. This is the only thing that we have here. We had two major questions on this verse, which we will begin to address now. Number one was the idea as to the wordy introduction of take now your son, your only son, the one you love, Yitzchak. Why does he have to say so many things in order to be able to get to the point of Yitzchak and take him to the land of Moriah? You will offer him up there as an offering on one of the mountains which I shall show you. Let's take a look at some of the comments here that the Ramban makes. I'm going to use this because I keep... Says the Ramban, beginning at 2, top of page 497, please take your son, your only son. Abraham had two sons. Why then is Yitzchak referred to as your only one? Because at the end of the day, simply not know the sides for a question as to how wordy it is. Take your son, your only son, the one you love, Yitzchak. It's not even true. He's not your only son. He has two sons. Says the Ramban. Again, the Ramban is going to deal much more with pshat, the simple meaning of the story, and we'll get to Rashi, God willing, to next week. Due to Yitzchak's being the son of the lady of the house. Yitzchak is the son of his wife Sarah. Yishmael was the son of the maidservant Hagar. Says the Ramban, as opposed to the son of the servant who is Yishmael, hu levado yikarelo zera, and due to the fact that he is alone going to be considered the offspring of Avraham, as we had seen the blessing, ki bi Yitzchak yikarelo chazera, when God comes in and intervenes the conversation of Avraham and Sarah and says, listen to Sarah, send Yishmael out, in Yitzchak will be your children. They will be the ones called your descendants who will continue this Abrahamic promise. Therefore, says the Ramban, God calls him the only one. So on a simple level of pshat, of the meaning of the story, why is he the Yichido? Because he's already been distinguished by God as the one who's going to continue your legacy. Yishmael has been kicked out. God stood behind that decision. He said, I will make him a great nation. Do not worry about him. I will bless him. But it's Yitzchak who's going to be, your progeny will be called after you and your descendant, and therefore I can call him your only one. This expression, says the Ramban, was used here, although Isaac is explicitly mentioned by name in any event. So if we know that it's going to be Yitzchak, why do we add the phrase, the only one, to increase the magnitude of the challenge of the commandment, and hence to increase its reward? Here the Ramban is again referring to his previous comments. What happens when I call him the one you love, your only one?
Emotion.
Right? And as much as we're going to see the balance of Avram as he's going, how do I handle, I'm taking my son, I'm going to kill him, I'm distancing myself, I'm close to him. So God creates the test by first increasing the level of closeness that's there, calling him the one that you love and your only one. Why? To increase the magnitude of the test. And again, here in our own minds and our own experiences, what's going on? Right? You'd say, if we were Avram, you'd say, it's not enough you're asking me to slaughter my only son, and now you make it more difficult. And the response, says the Ramban, is, yeah, because I know you're going to make it through, and the more difficult the test along the way, the more reward for eternity at the end. In the same way as a bodybuilder knows that the more weights he puts on the machine, The more difficult it is, and you say more, then they get more difficult. You say, I know. What's the goal? Goal is to be really strong and fit. The more weights you have as you work out, the stronger and fitter you will be, and therefore, that's why I do that. And therefore, the increase in the level of the difficulty is added. And therefore, the Rabban concludes, God was saying, in effect, please take your son, the only, the beloved Yitzhak, and offer him up as a burnt offering before me, increasing the level of closeness that Avram feels, increasing the magnitude of the test, increasing his reward. Okay, where is Avram told to go?
To Moriah.
To the land of Moriah. Right? He says two phrases. To the land of Moriah, and offer him up on one of the mountains that I shall show you. So the way the text would say it is that there's a land of Moriah, and then on one of the mountains there, you'll offer him as a sacrifice to me. So the Ramban, the Targum Unkelos, the Aramaic translation, and Rashi all try to figure out what is the land of Moriah. What is that specifically referring to? What we're going to do, since we're starting with the Ramban, we're going to skip over his explanation of Rashi and his claims against Rashi and go with his particular explanation. I want to start with the Targum. The Unkelos, who translates the Torah into Aramaic, he translates Eretz HaMoriah, the land of Moriah, as the Ara Pulchana, the land of worship. So that I want you to go, see, Hashem says to Avram, to the land of worship, and there you will see a mountain which I will show you, and on that mountain you will offer up your son Yitzchak. And what the Ramban is going to discuss is why is God calling this land that he's going to the land of worship according to the translation of Unkelos. So let's start with, in the middle of page 498, towards right in the middle of that page you see the non-bold, it says Ramban now presents his own explanation. Want to have that? So Ramban is going to prevent his own explanation for the base of Unkelos rending Moriah is the land of worship. Why? Ramban is going to explain to us why the Targum, the translation of Unkelos, understood the land of Moriah to be the land of worship. Says Ramban, his intention is to say the land where they would serve God in general. Meaning, Eretz HaMoriah is God's way of referring to the land of Israel, because that is the land that the Jewish people will eventually serve God in. That's the place where we go. And by this, says the Ramban, he intends what the sages expounded in the Medrash. They said, the Etzba, the Holy One, blessed be He, pointed out the altar with His finger to our patriarch Abraham. That when Abram gets to the place, Hashem points and says, here, this is the altar that I want you to use. It is the altar upon which Adam, the first man, used to sacrifice. It is the altar upon which Cain and Abel sacrificed. It is the altar upon which Noah and his sons sacrificed. So that when Abraham gets there in the land of the worship, God points to that altar and says, this is the one that Adam Harisho knew from where he was created, that was going to the place eventually where the Holy Temple would stand. He built an altar there. Cain and Abel had their altar there. Noah comes and brings his sacrifices there. And that's the place that Hashem tells to Abraham, build for me an altar, says the Ramban, and that's why it says, Vayiven Shom Avraham Es HaMizbeach. When we get to verse 9, we'll see, and there Avraham built the altar. Says the Ramban, it should have said he built an altar. He got there and he built an altar. He didn't build just another altar. He built the altar, the one that had been there from the time that Adam used, that Cain and Hevel used, that Noach used, and now Avram is going to use that same altar. This is the altar upon which the ancient ones, Adam, Noach, Cain, and Hevel sacrificed. And that's the end of the Medrash. And therefore, says the Ramban, Unkelos therefore took the name Moriah. So why is it called Eretz HaMoriah? Where does that word come from, Moriah? The word Moriah as comes from Morah, fear. Shesham Yiru Ho Elokim the Ivdu Lefanav. For there the ancient ones feared God and worshipped before Him. So Eretz HaMoriah, Eretz, when you hear that phrase, says the Ramban, the root of the word Moriah comes from the word Mora'ah, which is a word of fear. It's the land that the early ones, Adam, Cain, and Abel, and Noach, feared. God built an altar, and that was the same place that Abraham would now construct the altar to offer his son Yitzchak, and this is of course going to be the same place that the temple would eventually be built, and on that spot would be, you know, the Holy of Holies, the place where future sacrifices from the Jewish people would be offered as well. There are two meanings of the word Yira in terms of when we talk about fear of God. The lower level, which is a high level, but lower of the two, is that first concept of I'm afraid. I'm afraid of punishment. I'm afraid of doing something wrong. I'm afraid of ramifications. So that I'm in fear because of the greatness of what I stand before, and therefore I don't want something to happen because of that. I don't want to mess up. I don't want to ruin the relationship. The higher level is fear in the sense of awe. I'm not afraid of punishment. I have a level of fear. I'm in awe of the greatness of the presence before whom I stand. That is the greater level. Those are both levels of, they're significant levels. In other words, Jews, we need to work on simply walking around with the fear of I might be punished for something that I'm doing. That's a level. And whatever it is that a Jew, on whatever level of observance a Jew has, when you say, why do you do that? Because on some level, at the end of the day, I believe that doing this would be wrong and I'll be punished for it. On whatever level of the spectrum. Beyond that, you know, that's where the human element comes in of I believe, I don't believe, I'm afraid, I'm not afraid, however we handle that. But I don't do that because that's just wrong and I believe something's going to happen. The higher level is my actions are dictated because of the awe that I have. Now what the Ramban means here, I'm not quite sure. I imagine when he's discussing Adam and Cain and Abel and Noah and Abraham, he's discussing the higher level, but that's just because that's who we're talking about. But
thank you.
Okay, the Ramban discusses, I'm not going to read it inside, whether or not the entire land was called the land of Moriah and there was a mountainous range within there that God would show him, or the specific mountain was called that. We're not going to get into that in terms of that specifics, but the area was certainly called the land of Moriah. It was the land, as the Ramban understands, where they feared and worshipped God. It was a place that had been worshipped on from the beginning of time, from Adam through his children, Cain and Abel, through Noah, and now through Abraham, setting up us today. Now, where is Abraham now? He's quite a journey's away. So Hashem gives Avram a command in the place where he is to take his son and offer him as an offering in a 3 days journey away. There was another way that he could have done it. He could have said to Avram, go with your son Yitzchak, go to the place that I will show you in the land of Moriah, and I will give you instructions there. And Avram and his son Yitzchak could have traveled together. They would have been just sitting around and schmoozing and talking and learning. And then when they got there, Hashem would have said to Avraham, what I want you to do is offer up your son Yitzchak as a sacrifice. So that's not what he does. He tells him in the beginning, back where he is, what the eventual plan is. And you'll travel for the 3 days' time. Says the Ramban, why does Hashem do it in such a manner? Why not either first tell him what to do when you get there, or have him bring him as a sacrifice much closer to home? Says the Ramban, Vitzivo, on page 500 now, Vitzivohu laha aloso b'makomahu, and God commands Avram to offer up Yitzchak in that particular place, because that was the mountain that God desired for his abode. Number one, it's got to be there, because that's the place. God has chosen that as a place for his abode, chosen from the time of, as we said, Adam, Cain, Hevel, Avraham, Noach. That's the place. V'ratzo shetiyeh zuchusa akeda b'karbonos la'olam. And he wanted the merit of the akeda, meaning the binding of Isaac on the altar, to be applicable to the offerings that would be brought in the temple on that site for all time. So that this action was not only going to stand in the stead of Avram and Yitzchak at that time, but the fact that he would do it there, at the place where the temple would stand, would mean that every sacrifice offered by the Jewish people for the hundreds of years that the temple stood would have in that sacrifice an element of Avraham, our forefather, was willing to sacrifice his son Yitzchak to you, and you've commanded us instead to bring these animals in our place. But the merit of Avraham being willing to offer his son is going to stand in its stead, because this was the place that it was done. And therefore, says the Ramban, God specifically wants this action to take place on that altar in that place. As Avram himself says, Hashem yireh, that may Hashem see, as we're going to get to, as we go over verse 14, that Hashem, Avram names the place Hashem yireh, that Hashem should see. The Ramban is explaining that Hashem should see the merit of that which I did and stand at for my children for all time. The ode, furthermore, says the Ramban, in order to enhance the merit of Avram's righteousness, he increased his toil.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted that Avram should do this act after a 3-day journey. Why? Because if Avram would do so suddenly in his own place, his action would be done with haste and confusion. And this is an idea that we're going to see a lot. Rashi's going to comment on this as well. There's a 3-day journey. Hashem does not want Avraham to be alarmed, to be stunned, and to do something without being able to say. And so often we do things in life, things happen quickly, and we look back and reflect and we say, it just happened so fast. I just didn't have it. And as we play it back in our minds, we say, oh, if I could only relive that, I would have done it like this, I would have said that. But life doesn't always work that way. Things sometimes happen fast, which is why we have to prepare in advance, that we know how to handle certain things, because when we're caught off guard, things happen and we're not necessarily prepared. I know I have a group of primarily women, but I'm going to bring a football example anyway.
We know football.
I'm sure you do. I told this to my kids. For those of you following football, and I'm sure none of you are, but... So the Super Bowl is going to be this week. So the previous game that led to the Super Bowl ended when the Baltimore Ravens missed the field goal that would have otherwise tied the game. They missed the field goal with a couple seconds left, and the game therefore ends, and the Patriots instead go on to the Super Bowl. The field goal was what they call a chip shot, an easy, make-it-in-your-sleep kind of kick. No kicker in the NFL should ever miss from that close. And he did.
And the best kicker.
Why? So what happened was the kicker and part of the team were confused on the sideline because the scoreboard made a mistake. The scoreboard, when it was supposed to be second down, listed it as first down. So when it was really fourth down, which was he was going to kick, he thought it was third down. All of a sudden they got rushed. And if you look in the highlight, it's clear the whole play was rushed. And he missed. And it's just so fascinating. Something. This is all the man does. His entire job is kick field goals. This is the end of the season. He's been doing this for like 10 months straight. That's all he practices. But when the system is rushed and it's not done the way that it's supposed to be done, there's the routine they go through. They measure off exactly how far away they stand. There's a timing. So that even if it's a behavior which has been repeated without exaggeration, I would say from the beginning of this, forget about his career. Just this one season had been repeated, I don't know, 5,000 times easy? Easy. But when it's done quickly, in a big moment, it doesn't go. Even though it should never be missed. It's just an easy thing. But it was rushed. When things are right. So Ramban says, this is a major moment. I'm asking something significant of Avram. And I don't want it to be rushed. Because even if he does it well, I don't want people to say, he wasn't able, he wasn't thinking straight. I want it to be where he has time, he's thinking about it, he's traveling for 3 days, he's gone over in his head, over and over what the plan is. And he does it with a complete heart, and more than a complete heart, a complete head. So the Ramban says, so I told him where he is, and I wanted to be on the top of Mount Moriah because that's the place of the altar. And I want him to know about it the whole way there. I don't want him to get to the bottom of that mountain, and then I say, okay, I offer up your son as a sacrifice. Oh, he's not a sacrifice! No. For 3 days, you're going to walk alongside your kid. You're going to be talking with him. You're going to have conversations with him. But you know what you're doing, so that you're completely set and convinced that you know with a full mind, of sound mind and sound body, that you're going to perform this act. So too, says Rabban, four lines from the bottom, they said in Bereshis, Rabbah, Rabbi Akiva says, God tested him in the literal sense. So that people should not say he confounded him and mixed him up and he did not fully know what he was doing. The whole test was set up in a way where there is no opportunity to say that he knew clearly what it was that was going on, what was the task that lay before him, and he would be able to do it on his own of sound mind. You know, I take so many lessons from this, just to be able to pause. Sometimes we can't, and sometimes we can, and we don't take the opportunity. We have the little voice in our head that says, stop. Just don't make the decision yet. Call a timeout in life. And just, I need to think this over. I can't give you an answer right now. I can't respond right now. Wait. I need to be able to think it through. And Hashem did not want that there should be where anyone can say, yeah, Avram did it, but it's because God came to him and said something and he said, I'll do it. No. I want Avram to be able to have thought it through and to learn the lessons for us in terms of being able, when we feel that coming on, that said, sometimes we can't. We got to do the best we can under the circumstances. But many times we can. We can say, I need to call you back in 2 minutes. You know, I get people call and they're all worked up. And when you're on the phone with somebody who's worked up, you often get caught up in that. And just be able to say, I need to call you back in a minute. I can't deal with this right now. I can't think it through. I don't feel comfortable giving a response. And when you can do it, to be able to recognize that how significant that is, we don't think straight when that happens, and we often need to be able to do so. Okay, moving on to verse 3. So verse 3, we are very bothered by the fact that Abraham goes, and what he does is he wakes up early in the morning, he saddles up his donkey, takes his two men with him, he chops the wood for the offering, stood up and went to the place which God had spoken to him. We had a lot of comments that he wakes up early in the morning, why does he take the two men with him, why does he chop the wood, then what does it mean he stood up, why do we have this verb, he stood up in the middle of nowhere. So Rabban is going to address just one of these points, and again we'll keep track of all of these, I hope, and we'll put them all together as we go through. What's with the chopping of the wood? The Rabban asks the question, we asked, he's a 3 days' journey away. You're not going to find wood anywhere closer? That you got to schlep this wood from where you are for 3 days? Why? Says the Rabban, Zrizuso b'mitzvah. His alacrity in fulfilling God's commands. Listen to how the Rabban understands this. He thought, perhaps, ulai, I might not find wood in that place where he was going. So he carried them for 3 days. Two answers the Rabban is going to give. Number one, he was just concerned that it won't work out well. I won't find what I need. So it's worth it for me to schlep the wood for 3 days so that I know I'll have what I need when I get there. You know, this really fits into the Rabban's previous comment. You know, he didn't want, and very often we do this ourselves also, he didn't want that when he gets there, that his first thought is going to be, okay, I got to go find the wood now. And I'm running around. I want everything to be set and calm that I could fulfill this mitzvah in the way that it needs to be done. I don't want it in my head that as I'm walking, I have this mental checklist the whole time. Okay, when I get there, I need to build the altar, chop the wood. No. I'm going to bring everything that I need so that I am set, I am clear. With alacrity, I can fulfill this mitzvah that I don't... It's done. I have it done now, and it's worth it for me to schlep to make sure that I have that which I need. Then the Rabban has a second interpretation. Alternatively, he says, Avram considered wood in which a maggot is found to be disqualified for altar offerings. In accordance with the Torah law, there's a discussion in the Mishnayos as to whether or not if it's an infested piece of wood, are you allowed to use it on the Mizbeach, on the altar, for a sacrifice, for a karban. So the Rabban suggests that maybe that Avraham held that you could not use it. So he didn't want to take the chance that the wood that he would find would be disqualified. So he said, I have quality wood from my own home that we can use as a burnt offering, and therefore he chopped the wood of a burnt offering. Meaning he's coming off of the phrase, the Torah says he chopped the wood for the offering, like it was somehow, it wasn't that he just chopped wood, but he chopped the wood that's good for an offering, meaning he knew that this wood is for sure qualified to be used, and he didn't want to take the chance that he wouldn't find that wood there. So he, again, made sure that he had all the necessary components that he would need already at this point, and he brings that with him, worth on the 3-day trip, to schlep all that wood.
How come there is no protestation from
who? Right, so this is going to be part of that test. In other words, let's add to that question. There's no protest. When Sarah says to Avram, kick out your son Yishmael, Avram says, no. When Hashem says to Avram, the people of Sodom are wicked, I'm going to kill them, Avram says, no. God says to Avram, offer to me your only son, the one you love, Yitzchak, Avram says, hineini. So it's not like he hasn't protested certain things in the past. And here he goes along with it. And we will add that question to that general pool of what is this test? And as Ramban has told us today, the test is to bring out the potential of a person into actualization. But what is this test? What does God want from Avraham? Whereas the test by Sodom would have been to see, will you protest? I want to kill these wicked people and I want to see from you, are you going to stand up for them? And somehow here the test is, I want you to kill your son, and the test is not to protest, but to say, I'll do it. Well, what kind of test is it? What do we want to see? Is it, again, we threw this question away, is it loyalty? Is it fear? Is it trust? Or is it all of those? What exactly is this test where there is no protest from Abraham? And just the opposite, it seems like that is success in the test, that he didn't even protest it and say, how can you do that? You promised me generations of children through this son. This is ridiculous. I'm a man of kindness. He doesn't use any of those arguments, and he just goes ahead and does it. And that's going to be, we'll add that to trying to understand exactly what that test is. But we do not see any protest from Avraham, nor are we going to see any protest from Yitzchak once it becomes clear to him as well as to what this test is. We don't see any protest from either of them. Okay, let's move on. Verse 4. On the third day, the Torah says, I'm just reading the verse on top of page 501. On the third day, Avram raised his eyes and saw the place from afar. So again, the Torah had told us that God was going to show Avraham the place that he needs to go. And the way that the verse describes it in verse 4 is not that Hashem said to Avram, there is the place, but that Avraham raises up his eyes and he sees the place from afar. Says the Ramban, he saw a cloud affixed to the mountain, which is based on the Medrash. Rashi is going to quote this as well, that as Avram is looking there, he sees this cloud, not just a rain cloud, but a cloud representing the cloud of glory, fixing itself upon one of the mountains. And God's statement, offer him unto one of the mountains, which I shall tell you, was fulfilled in this manner. So that we're not going to find in the text, says the Ramban, a verbal declaration from Hashem, that mountain or this mountain, but that it was shown to Abraham through the manifest of the Shekhinah, of the Divine Presence, through the cloud on top of one of the mountains. It is possible in the simple manner of interpretation, the Ramban adds, that he saw the place from afar means he saw the land of Moriah, for he was familiar with that whole area. And then, as he said to him, here, this is the mountain that I told you about, meaning that even though the text doesn't tell us that Hashem said that to Avraham, it was there. So the Ramban, the text doesn't tell us, either Ramban says there was a conversation and we just don't know about it, or he saw it from afar, and that's how the text is telling us through the cloud which was present there. Fine. Okay. In the Ramban's commentary, he skips from verse 4 all the way to verse 12. Now, in those verses in between is the bulk of our story. The bulk of the story of Avraham, you know, leaving the donkey behind, going up the mountain, taking out the knife, and have an angel calling out. Ramban doesn't address any of that. We're going to see a lot of that addressed on the midrashic level. So on the simple level of the text, we have a story here. The Ramban is going to pick up with the sentence, the statement that the angel makes in verse 12 when he stops him, do not stretch out your hand, do not do anything to him, for now I know that you are a God-fearing man. We ask the question, now you know that he's a God-fearing man? I mean, Avram has been through so much at this point. This is actually, according to most of the commentators, the Ramban himself, the tenth of the ten tests that Avraham is faced with. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos and Ethics of Our Fathers say that Avraham is given ten tests. This is the last one, according to the Ramban. And now you know that he's a God-fearing man? Says the Ramban on the bottom of page 503. At first, Avram's fear of God was still latent. Meaning that this level of the trait, as Ramban again being consistent with his approach the whole way through, the concept of bringing out one's potential into actuality was still latent and had not yet emerged into actuality by means of this great deed. But now, with the performance of this deed, it became known indeed, and his merit became complete, and his reward was full from Hashem, the God of Israel. Now we'll keep this in mind, this comment, as we learn other interpretations. The Ramban is explaining, what does it mean when the verse says, now I know that you're a God-fearing man? It does not mean it literally, in the sense of God did not know something before, and he does know something now. The simple meaning of the text creates that problem. It's as if there's a new piece of information that has been uncovered, and now I know that you fear God as if I did not know that. So the Ramban, consistent with his approach, says, what took place in this dialogue between the angel and Avram? Now I know in actuality, meaning now it's real, I know it, meaning the word know infers a different level of knowledge, a more intimate level of knowledge. Before it was potential, and now I know, now I see, now it's real that you fear God because you've actually fulfilled it. That's how the Ramban understands it on a simple level. We will certainly get back to this phrase as well. Continues the Ramban, the concept expressed in this section that it was God who was testing Avram and commanding him concerning the binding of Isaac, and it was the angel of Hashem who was preventing it and promising Avram that he would be blessed, will be elaborated upon on the verse, the angel who redeems me from all evil. We will have to get back to this. Remember, we raised this question, we were very bothered by the fact that in this particular story, it's God Himself who gives the command, and then the angel of Hashem who stops it. Avram should have had every right to say, oh, wait a minute. If God told me to do it, I should need a command from God not to do it. How can it be that I'm getting an angel telling me not to do that which God told me to do? Says Ramban, we will get to that, and we, Mirza Hashem, will take a look at that as well. One last Ramban for today. Verse 16, the angel continuing, this is now the second time the angel calls out to Avram and says, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, now I will promise you all of these things. And we ask the question, what is it promised him in verse 17? I shall bless you, greatly you increase your offspring like the stars of heaven, like the sand of the seashore, and they shall inherit the gates of their enemies. And we said, wait a minute. Now you're being promised to be like the stars of the heaven and the sand of the sea? That has been promised already before. So why is that being added now, seemingly as a result of this episode, that you'll receive these blessings together with the blessings of inheriting the gate of your enemies? Those blessings already had been given to Avram, says the Ramban. Beforehand, God had also promised that he would multiply his offspring like the stars of heaven, like the dust of the earth. But now, however, he added, because you have done this great deed, that you will also inherit the gates of his enemies. So as we reference this question, there are three things that are being promised to Avram. Stars, sand, and inheriting the gates of your enemies. Two of the three already had been promised. And we ask that as a question, like I just mentioned. The Ramban answers the question by saying, really all that's being added here is the third. You will inherit the gates of your enemies. But that third blessing is going to impact the first two of being as numerous as the stars and as the sand, says the Ramban, so that now Avraham was assured that no sin of his or of his children could bring about that his offspring might perish, or that they might fall into the hands of their enemies and not rise again. So that now this is a complete promise for the redemption destined to us, for us to experience. And when we talk about the significance of this event on our Jewish national history, we'll get back to this Ramban. The Ramban is saying the promise that Avram had had before of like your stars will be like the sand and like the stars was a promise which might have been reneged upon if their behavior did not warrant its fulfillment. If Avram himself would sin, maybe if his children would sin, God could say there was a covenant. If you kept the covenant, this is the promise that I've given you, and it doesn't apply to these circumstances anymore. And now, with the fulfillment of this particular test, God swears to Avraham through the angel that they will inherit the gates of their enemies. And what does that add? The Ramban understands that that means that no one will ever be able to conquer you. No enemy will ever be on top of you to the point where you will not be able to rise again or that your offspring will perish, so that the blessing of inheriting the gates of your enemies will ensure the constant fulfillment of your enemy. Your children will be like the stars of the heaven and the sand of the sea, and no enemy can come and do anything to them despite your behavior or your actions. You will always inherit the gates of your enemy in the sense that the first two blessings will be fulfilled and they will be as numerous as the stars in the sand and never be decimated to the point where they cannot rise again. We will have ups and downs, we will have pogroms, we will have holocausts, we will have inquisitions, we will have you name it. But they will always rise again because we now have the blessing of inheriting the gates of our enemies. May we see that fulfilled soon, where we can all return to the land of Israel and live in peace, as numerous as the stars and the sand of the sea. Okay, that's Ramban. Ramban is much more text-based. He did not address the entire story, as you noted. Many of the verses he left out. Rashi, we'll see Mirtz Hashem next week, is going to be much more midrashically inclined. And then we'll take a look and continue further from there. Have a great week. I'll hold on to this if you want. We'll leave them here on the shelf. If you want to keep them, you can do that also.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.